From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, it is time for Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. The latest figures available report that there are about 334,000 veterans among Kentucky's 4.4 million citizens. Of these, 92,000 served in peacetime, 90,000 during the Gulf War, 118,000 during Vietnam, 32,000 during the Korean conflict, and from what I've been able to find, just 18 during World War II. I guess that generation is beginning to disappear. I guess we can say for practical purposes has disappeared. On today's show, we're hoping to hear from some of the men and women who served and returned to civilian life. We're also interested about your transition, your stories of your transition back to life in the Commonwealth. With us to discuss the issues at the moment in the studio with us are Brett Morris, Director of Admissions and Interim Director of the Eastern Kentucky University Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. He just finished a dissertation on a topic involving veterans in higher ed, and we'll hear more about that. Brett, thanks for being with us this morning.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
We're so glad to meet one of our neighbors on campus, of course. And also with us is Kevin Pernicano, Ph.D., Dr. Pernicano joined the Lexington VA Medical Center in October of 2012, but you have a long career in working in veteran services?
Yes, sir. I have 33 proud years serving the Veterans Administration. Thank you.
But that was where before coming to
I've had several VA hospitals. I've worked in Chicago, in Texas, up by New York, New Jersey. All over the country, so I have a wide exposure to our veterans.
And the ability to kind of fill us in on what's been going on these last few decades.
I'll do my best.
All right, excellent. Well, let's start off by talking about, and we also, by the way, hope to have with us before the end of the show, Ken Lucas, Commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Veteran Affairs. And he may show up at any time, but we will introduce him when that occurs. Let's talk about services available to veterans in Kentucky. Throughout the week, we've been running announcements asking listeners to tell us their stories about their service and their return to civilian life. And we want to encourage our listeners to do that still by sending an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is at WEKUEST, and you are certainly encouraged and welcome to tweet a question if you like. And in a few minutes, we'll open the telephone lines as well. But that email address, once again, that starts with WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. You can also post on our Facebook page, and we'll keep an eye on that. Our producer, Richard Turner, will let us know if anyone has posted on Facebook, and you can continue a dialogue back and forth on our topic. And we'll open the phones for you in a little bit. Brett Morris, on campus here at Eastern Kentucky University. Eastern has focused on service to veterans and reaching out to serving veterans across the state. What is available here on campus?
You know, I would say that the number of veterans we have has grown tremendously. When I came on board in February of 2010, we had about 500 veterans and dependents. This year, we have nearly 1,400 dependents and veterans, and that's part of that is trying to make sure that we are veteran helpful. I use veteran helpful instead of veteran friendly because you can be friendly all day long, but it's what help can you provide? And so, some of the things that we do here for them is we help them with their processing of their veterans claims to the VA to get their GI Bill benefits going. We also help them with transition coursework to make sure that they're fully prepared and up to speed, as well as connecting them with tutoring services. And we have a great veteran success on campus representative. Kim Dickey is our VSOC, and that's actually a person who's actually a VA employee who works in our Military and Veterans
VSOC.
Affairs. VSOC, Veteran Success on Campus. It's a new national program that's in, I think, about 90-plus schools across the country. And these are VA employees that are working in offices like ours to help those veterans connect with their VA issues. So many times there's things that we do, but we don't have a direct connection to the VA to be able to solve those problems. And Kim's there in that capacity to be able to kind of cut through the bureaucracy and get to the solutions that are needed to help these vets stay in school and stay on track.
Brett is our expert on services available to students and potential students at EKU and, I guess, in the wider Kentucky academic community. If people are thinking about going to another school or so forth, you would have some background or some information.
Sure, and
on
I can,
that.
I you know, share what we know that's going on across the state in terms of programming.
Excellent. Kevin Pernicano, the VA Medical Center. Across the nation, there are many of these. How many are there?
Well, there are about 150 different medical centers and clinics available across the country with 1,700 points of care for eligible veterans. And the VA nationwide serves about 9 million veterans per year.
In my statistics I'm not sure whose website I got these from, am I pretty much accurate in terms of and in the introduction, we said most folks, veterans, return to civilian life, I guess, uninjured, at least physically. Is that true?
I would say that by and large, most of our veterans have served admirably. They do return to their normal, regular walks of life. But as we know, there are a certain percentage who come back injured mentally or physically. And we do our best to take care of those folks when they come back.
Let's talk about services available in Lexington, Kentucky, and statewide. Are there other VA medical or VA service centers besides Lexington in the state?
There are two VA medical centers in Kentucky. One is in Louisville and one is in Lexington. I'd worked at Louisville for a number of years, but we're in Lexington now, so I'll speak to that. There are two divisions to our hospital. One is downtown near UK. It's on Cooper Drive. It basically addresses acute medical needs and things that would interface with the high-intensity university-type care. The other division is in Leestown Road. It's about 5 miles outside of town, and that campus comprises most of the primary care, mental health care, and other general and specialty care for our veterans. We also have a nursing home out there, hospice, respite care, dental, and so on.
Let's talk in general. A veteran, man or woman, leaves the service in 2013. What should they do first thing? Maybe we have families listening, and we have somebody who's getting ready to leave the service, or to their term is up. What's the first thing they should do as far as getting veteran services? Should every veteran, in some fashion, touch base with a veterans organization, VA, state service, or elsewhere?
I would really appreciate it if every veteran who served seeks VA services. That's what we're there for. That's our specialty. We believe we take care of our veterans the best and better than any other facility or network in the entire nation. Most veterans, when they leave service, they are usually processed out. Part of that processing involves helping them contact deal with disabilities that may have developed during the service. For those that don't have disabilities, they are aware or made aware of VA services. They do have to establish eligibility at each VA, regardless of where they live, which means they need to report to one of our four community-based clinics. We have one in Berea nearby. We have one in Hazard, Berea, Somerset, and Moorhead. Or they can come to the parent facility. They may be able to do it online also. Once their eligibility is established, the veteran will be assigned a primary care provider, and then they can begin accessing the full range of services we offer them.
There have been stories and, of course, issues for years talking about access to veteran services. Is that a specific area? I know I've heard of folks signing up for disability benefits specifically being a long, long backlog, and I know that many, many media reports and many people raising that concern.
Yes, and I'm on the healthcare side of veterans care. There are four divisions to the VA. We are under the Veterans Health Administration, which is the hospital division. We provide patient care. The benefits section, which so often makes the press, is under the Veterans Benefit Administration, and they're a separate arm of the VA, although we do interface with them. My understanding is that they are working very hard to improve their processing time and bring these veterans who have worked so hard to get their benefits, to get them in a more timely fashion. And I understand that there have been some improvements recently in that. The other two areas of the Veterans Administration are the Veterans Cemetery group, and that has to do with burials and so on for those veterans who are deceased and wish to be buried in a VA cemetery. And the other one is the Veterans Readjustment group, and that's for the vet centers. And they, again, are separate but do provide very important services to our veterans who return and their families as well.
Brett Morris of the EKU.
Yeah. You know, you were saying, you know, should they seek access to veterans benefits? And I would say, especially on the educational side, that's something that they all have, but there's a time limit. There's a 15-year under the new post 9/11 GI Bill. If they do not use those benefits within 15 years, they expire in terms of the eligibility. And the other thing is they think, well, I have to know where I'm going to school to start that process. And I would say, no, you don't. Actually, when you get out, you can apply for your benefits and you can say, well, I think I might be going to this school. But if you change your mind and you go to another school, or even if you delay that decision of when you're going to go to school, you will already be certified in the system. So I would encourage all the veterans to go ahead and make the application for their VA letter of eligibility. That's what it's called when they apply for those benefits. And then when they are ready to start school, they've already got that. That's where the backlog comes in, is getting them eligible to receive those benefits. And so the first time when they're making application, it can take 4 to 6 to 8 weeks to get those decisions back. And so the sooner they get that part of it done, the easier it will become if they come to school later on.
Okay, best to do whatever they can as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
This is Eastern Standard. Of course, Veterans Day is this coming Monday, and we are discussing the status of veterans in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and we'd like to hear from veterans. We encourage you to give us a call. We'll go ahead and open the phone lines at 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. We'd like to hear your story as a veteran, as a family member of a veteran. What has occurred for you? What have been the challenges? What has been very rewarding and helpful to you? Where are the gaps, and where can the state, the federal government, our educational institutions provide better service for you? 800-621-8890. Send us an email if you choose, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can also go to the Facebook page, the WEKU Facebook page, and post a message there, and we'll keep an eye on that and try to relay that on the air. We want to talk about unemployment, physical and mental illnesses. We want to talk about disabilities, education issues, Brett represented here, acceptance by family and community, perceptions of veterans in our culture. And I assume that those have changed and shifted over the years. I'm a product of the Vietnam era, and there were a lot of issues in that era. We want to talk about where services to veterans and the perceptions within the community overall stand. And we will continue to discuss these issues during our conversation on Eastern Standard, 800-621-8890. We'll take a short break. And we'll get back and focus for the issue of unemployment in just a few moments on Eastern Standard on WEKU.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret.
This is Eastern Standard on WEKU. I'm John Hingsbergen, and we are discussing veterans, the status of veterans in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And joining us in the studio now is Mr. Ken Lucas, Commissioner Ken Lucas of the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs. Not a newcomer to our program. You were on the air with us just a few weeks ago when we were talking about the government shutdown and its effects. We have invited Ken Lucas to join us in the studio. He's a former congressman representing the Kentucky's 4th Congressional District and working with veterans now. And thank you for being with us this morning, Ken.
Happy to be here, John.
We're going to take a moment and listen to a report from NPR that I think was very appropriate. A lot going on, of course, a lot of discussion of veterans' issues at this time of the year. But in this story, Seattle coffee giant Starbucks is joining the likes of Walmart, Boeing, and J.P. Morgan Chase in setting up a special hiring program for veterans. It's part of an effort to bring down the high unemployment rate for veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. As Ashley Gross of member station KPLU reports, to succeed, companies need to take the time to understand the skills that former service members bring to the job.
Carol Stripling flips through a folder with printouts of all the jobs she's applied for in the past few months.
I've applied for case manager positions, some more legal, working in the courts.
For 37 years, Stripling served in the Army, both active duty and reserves, mostly as a paralegal. She retired from the military in 2011 and then worked for the state of Washington until she got laid off this year. She says she faces a trifecta of possible obstacles. She's 62 years old. She has a military background. And as a woman, she's not who people think of when they imagine a veteran.
It's real hard for veterans to say, I need help, because we're taught from the very beginning to be self-reliant. And so it's difficult to say, I'm failing at this. And basically, I feel like I'm failing at this.
I remember I couldn't get anyone to interview me, and I was getting tons of rejection letters.
Rob Porcarelli is a staff attorney at Starbucks who helped dream up the plan announced today. Starbucks will hire at least 10,000 veterans or their spouses over the next 5 years. Porcarelli was a prosecutor in the Navy in the 90s. But when he started hunting for a civilian job, he encountered prejudice.
In one interview downtown, the head of the department said, you know, Rob, I think that you're going to find more of the intellectual type in the law firm environment. And I remember thinking, maybe he's joking. Did he just call me and all my friends stupid?
It may be a little tougher for business at the beginning of the process, but I think the long-term benefits are tremendous.
Former Secretary of Defense Robert Gates sits on Starbucks' board. He says sometimes people coming out of the service have a hard time translating their skills. That's why the company will have a recruiter specialized in hiring service members. The jobs will range from making lattes to supply chain management. Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz says it's complicated to tease out why transitioning back to civilian employment is hard, but companies can help.
Businesses and business leaders have an obligation and responsibility to do something about that and to meet these people more than halfway.
The Institute for Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse University estimates a few hundred thousand veterans have been hired through targeted programs in the past 2 years. That's probably shaved a percentage point or two off their unemployment rate. But Russell Burgos of Pepperdine University, who himself is an Iraq War vet, says it's hard to pin down the numbers.
We don't know how many people apply for jobs or job fairs, how many fill out applications, how many are hired, and I think most importantly, what the employment outcomes of those veterans who are hired turn out to be.
That's why Starbucks plans to have a program manager to help with veteran retention, and the company says it will provide updates on hiring. Army vet Carol Stripling says she's applied to Starbucks before, but not as a barista.
I've already done my entry-level career.
This summer, she applied there for paralegal positions, and even with her decades of experience, she didn't get a response. She plans to apply to Starbucks again, and this time, she hopes she'll get somewhere. For NPR News, I'm Ashley Gross in Seattle.
This is Eastern Standard on 88.9 WEKU and our network of WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen with guests in the studio discussing veterans in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And we encourage you to get on the line. We do, I understand, have at least one caller on the line we'll get to in just a few moments at 800-621-8890. You can send us an email, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. And as I mentioned, joining us now is Ken Lucas, Commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Veteran Affairs. Mr. Lucas, let's talk about services available from the point of view of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Is that common? Does every state have its own Office of Veteran Services?
Yes, but they're all unique in their own way. And a misconception that we have is that we operate at the state level, and even though we work with people at the federal level, the hospitals and the CBOX and these things, we're really not officially a part of that. We have four veteran cemeteries throughout the state. We have three nursing homes. We're building a fourth nursing home down at Ratcliffe. And then we have veteran service officers, 18 of them, stationed all around the state, which help veterans with their benefits and with their pensions. And I would say, in the main, most of our constituency are the older veterans. But, of course, we're trying to integrate and to get involved in helping these folks coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
What are the issues facing veterans in Kentucky? Is there a high degree of unemployment? Are there a high degree of physical disabilities or illness or even mental illness such as PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yeah, well, with the PTSD, you know, I think that's very hard to wrap your hands around because it's I think it's a subjective in a lot of cases, but certainly that is something that is very much in vogue with these folks coming back from all these combat-related tours. And so we're trying as an organization to do what we can to help these younger veterans coming back again from Iraq and Afghanistan. And but like I say, we deal a lot with the older veterans, obviously in the nursing homes and folks that are passing away. And, of course, the World War II vets are dying at a rapid rate these days. And, of course, we've had these honor flights where we take World War II veterans up to D.C. to see that memorial. And that group, that population is getting smaller and smaller.
As I believe I got this information from your website that said there was something like 18 World War II veterans remaining in the state.
18,000.
Yeah.
Is it 18,000?
Yeah. No,
is it 18,000?
Yeah.
That may have been a typo,
yeah.
And I was totally confused by it. Well, so I'm glad I've had the source to check this out because that sounded out of line.
Yeah. Let me just add, you know, when we talk about the PTSD issue, because we get a lot of these young veterans on our campus, and I think there's this misconception, you know, we think that these young men and women aren't functional. They are functional at a very high level, most of them. It just depends. There's a whole range, and I think the doctor can support me here, of PTSD. There's mild and there's severe, and we see all kinds. And so for the vast majority of those coming back from the combat zone, they have developed the coping skills after they come back and readjust to being able to deal with everything on a daily basis perfectly. And then there are those that need more intense services through the mental health side of the house where they need regular counseling and regular support in order to deal with those things. So by any stretch of the imagination, we shouldn't believe that there's a big problem with PTSD in our society of veterans. I think they all have different levels of it. It can be very mild to the point that that you would never even know they served in the military or in combat, to those that have daily coping skill issues.
Kevin Pernicano, you want to have anything to add to that issue?
Well, with PTSD is a very hot topic with us right now. That and also the issue of traumatic brain injuries. Those seem to be the primary mental issues that come back from the conflict we're in now.
Is that traumatic brain injury issue something that's specific to the Iraq and Afghanistan wars? Because I have never heard of it until these
wars.
Well,
the nature of the war and the combat that they face in that particular venue, the IEDs and other explosive devices have resulted in concussion injuries. And over time with repeated concussion injuries, there are basically injuries to the brain tissue. It's not visible from the surface necessarily, but we can see it in terms of their behavior. Their families report it, it's a serious problem. I think in previous eras, many of the veterans who were exposed to explosions or other things just simply didn't survive. They weren't perished in the field because of lack of medical resources. Now we're very fortunate to be able to preserve these veterans' lives, but they do come back with some impairments. And
this is Eastern Standard, and we do want to talk with our listeners, 800-621-8890. And on the line waiting patiently for us, we hope, is Wendell from Letcher County. Wendell, are you still on the line?
Yes, sir, I am now. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead. Tell us your story.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I was drafted at age 22. I didn't seek a deferment. I had a good job. And I was drafted and felt it was an honor to serve my country. When I was, as I said, I left a good job and went in service. My wife and I had to sell our home because my income dropped drastically. She had to move in with her mother. And I served 2 years in the Army as a medic, and a year in Vietnam. And then after my service, I came out. I was able to utilize the VA educational portion. I completed my college, and, you know, life has been good.
Are you happy with the services provided by the federal VA as well as the state and other agencies?
I'm getting to that. No, I am not.
Okay.
In about 2006, I started using the Huntington VA hospital and the Prestonsburg Clinic for my medical needs. I thought this service was free to, you know, to veterans. I also have Medicare and hospitalization. So in about 2006, I started using those facilities. Nowhere was I told that VA does not, they do not bill Medicaid services. And veterans, you need to know that. And if you've got income over $36,000 a year, they will bill you. So in in August of 2013, I started using that in 2006. In 2013, I got a bill for $2,700 from VA. So I requested a hearing, which is still not being granted. But in the meantime, VA has started intercepting 15% of my Social Security to pay back. They did suspend all but $558 or $568 of those medical bills from February of 2011 until August of 2013. Never got a bill in that time period. And then in August, I got the bill for $2,700. They suspended it all but $500, and now they're intercepting 15% of my Social Security until that's paid.
Okay, Wendell, thank you for sharing your story. Let's pursue that topic, and let's hear from, we certainly want to hear from other listeners about your experience as veterans. 800-621-8890. Kevin Pernicano of the VA Medical Center. Wendell's gotten billed, and now I guess he's getting his Social Security being garnished, I guess, as similar to one would get their wages otherwise taken.
It's hard to make an actual judgment on Wendell's case without all of the facts, but it is unfortunate that he's in this situation right now. I know that the VA does have income requirements for their services. Those have changed over the years. I would hope that he sounds like he is a bright and articulate veteran and served our country well. I certainly hope that he has contacted his representatives and possibly an attorney to help him sort this out. I can't speak to the specifics without knowing more information, but I do know that the VA has income requirements, and I don't know if he's exceeded those. I would encourage him to look into that, and hopefully we can resolve this to his benefit.
800-621-8890 is our phone number. We're going to go back to the phones in just a quick moment. A listener commented or asked the question, when we refer to veterans, are we referring to everyone who has served in the military service or only those who have combat experience?
Well, technically, if you've completed basic training, you're a veteran. And that's one of the things that we struggle with. A lot of times, those that are still in the military don't see themselves as veterans yet. They think those are the guys down at the VFW and that are, sitting around and communicating with each other over a beer maybe or something like that. But technically, when you've completed basic training and you exit the service honorably, you're a veteran. And you're even technically a veteran while you're in the service in terms of eligibility for certain benefits.
Oh, very interesting. 800-621-8890. Tara from Lexington is on the line. Tara, thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
Thank you so much. Two things. First of all, I want to thank all the veterans. And every time I see one in uniform, I have the time to stop and shake their hand and thank them, because I think we just live in such a selfish society, and I don't want to get into that, but I want to thank all veterans. My grandfather was one of the oldest surviving members that fought at the Battle of the Bulge. My father didn't quit his senior year in college to become a Marine, so he's retired. My father went on and got in politics and got on the Armed Services Committee. And one of the things he told me I'll never forget is that when he was in South Korea, he walked out on the bridge where North Korea and South Korea face each other. And they're very, very hard, very, very heavily guarded. And there was one of our naval people out there, or Marines out there, one of our own, in military uniform with about 3 inches of snow all over him. And my father walked out to thank him and tell him how much it meant to him. And the military man said, "Sir, I just wonder if anybody knows I'm out here." Hmm. So with a story like that, that's why I want it, and will continue to stick out my hand and thank any veteran, regardless of their age. The other comment I want to say to you is, have you heard about the Saratoga War Horse?
No, positive nods, sir. No one is familiar with that.
Okay, you might want to look it up. It's called Saratoga War Horse, and it's a committee and what's been formed up in New York for people with very, very bad mental, emotional problems coming home, and they've put them with horses, retired thoroughbreds that are unwanted off of, you know.
Now that's looking a little more familiar to Kevin Pernicano. Yeah. Kevin?
Equine therapy is a relatively new development in the mental health field. I believe we have at least one practitioner in our area in Lexington.
Can you imagine that in this area of the country?
because we have wonderful and beautiful horses in this part of the world. But essentially it pairs impaired veterans with horses and with therapists, and it helps calm the veterans. It brings out their concerns. They feel – and the horses actually have a calming influence on them. It's a wonderful therapy.
Absolutely. I'm a horse woman and I'm an animal lover, period.
But Tara, thank you. Thank you for raising that. We do need to take a short break, and we're going to hear from our guests more about the equine therapy and other forms of therapy and services available to veterans. We're interested in your stories as veterans, or as Tara did, share the story of a family member or even someone else you know. 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. You can email us, WEKU Eastern Standard@gmail.com. We'll be right back.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
This is Eastern Standard on WEKU. I'm John Hingsbergen, and we are talking veterans in the Commonwealth of Kentucky with guest Ken Lucas, Commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Veteran Affairs, Brett Morris, Director of Admissions and Interim Director of the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs for Eastern Kentucky University, and Kevin Pernicano. Dr. Pernicano is Chief of Mental Health Services for the Lexington VA Medical Center. 800-621-8890 is our phone number. Please feel free to get on the line and tell your story or ask a question. That's 800-621-8890. The issue brought up by Tara about equine therapy is one that's ticked off, or not ticked off, but clicked off and caused a number of responses. I mean, Ken Lucas, you're talking about similar services. Even our state's First Lady is involved
in
such?
Yes, First Lady Jane Beshear, who is very much of a horsewoman. She kicked off a program at the horse park, Horses for Heroes, and we have people out there that are working with veterans who have PTSD issues, and apparently there is a very calming influence in getting a veteran with a horse, and that's been proven, I think, over and over again. And we also we've given money to a program down in Western Kentucky for the same reason.
I would like to add, we have a similar program that we work here with our students called Horses for Heroes, but we work with a local stable. Interesting, one of the vets that I met out there, he was a Desert Storm veteran and came back and was a recluse, wouldn't go out, wouldn't see anybody, and we got him connected with the horses. And all of a sudden, his therapy came not from riding but from working with the horses and working with the children that we were working with that program. And for him, it brought him out. And so it is a very good program. I think that it's wonderful, all kinds of animal therapy. We do we call it pausability. We bring vet dogs into campus as well as other dogs right before finals. And it's really interesting, the animal and human experience and how it affects people.
We're talking about veterans in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and we're interested in your question. 800-621-8890. Feel free to get on the line and be part of our conversation today. I've touched on a number of issues so far in the program, but I'm wondering, would it be safe to say that Kentucky is a little bit unique, or maybe there's a special strength in terms of the military family culture in Kentucky? Actually, that's a good one perhaps for Ken Lucas. I mean, many Kentuckians have served in our nation's wars over the years, and isn't the percentage perhaps higher than in many other states?
It's my understanding that I have learned that Kentucky has always given a disproportionate amount of folks to the war efforts. I mean, that's going back all the way back to the history of wars. And it's just been true that as a state, we've been very patriotic, and more than our fair share of young men and women have been involved in the military through the ages.
I think that that for me brings up the issue, and we've talked with a veteran from the Vietnam War, and we know that when veterans came home from the Vietnam War, many did not feel very well welcomed or very well treated. What about that situation at this point? How are veterans feeling about their return to civilian life following the Iraq or Afghanistan wars? Are there continuing issues of that type, or was that a unique moment in time, the Vietnam War?
Well, I would just tell you that I've talked to a lot of our young veterans, and they, to a person, say, you know, that they feel very welcome, that their service is appreciated in the classrooms. They don't feel intimidated that somehow people are going to put them down. And I owe a lot of the credit, I think, to the Vietnam veteran generation who stood up and said, we're not going to let this happen again. We're going to be out at the airports welcoming back. We're not going to allow people to do the things, you know. You've got the patriot riders that go out and defend the ceremonies for burials and that kind of stuff. So,
speaking to this, I heard on the news yesterday that there were some servicemen coming back on a, I think it was an American Airlines flight. I think it was out of New York. I'm not for sure. And a number of the servicemen were sitting in first class, but seven of them didn't have room for there. And seven people got up and gave their first class seats to the other seven service people so they could sit in first class. But I think that's an example of how our young men and women are revered today. Mm-hmm. It's really different. I might add, too, that Vietnam, I think there have been a lot of amends made to making them feel better than they did. And without question, they were not treated as they should have been way back. I know we are going to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War next year, and we're going to have quite a celebration in Frankfurt. We think it's going to be in October. And for those who don't realize it, there is a Kentucky Vietnam Memorial in Frankfurt, which is quite unique. And people from all around the country, bus tours, stop by to view this thing because in its design, it's a one of a kind. So I think the Vietnam veterans are getting a very delayed justification for their service, which is long overdue.
This is Eastern Standard. Our phone number is 800-621-8890, 800-621-8890. Let's talk to Tom from Williamsburg. Tom, thank you for calling in. Go right ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was just wondering, as far as you see on the news all the time, there's a huge backlog of VA claims and things. What is the state of Kentucky and our regional office here doing anything to decrease that backlog on a scale that might be equal to or greater than other regional offices. And you guys were just talking about the disproportionate number of veterans who are from Kentucky. What are we doing to help those people who have active claims right now and who are waiting 9 months, a year, 2 years for their claims to go through?
Kevin Pernicano is the chief of mental health at the VA Center in Lexington.
Yeah, Tom, thank you for expressing your concerns, and I know a lot of veterans share your concern with the delays. Again, I mentioned earlier, I'm on the hospital side of things. The Veterans Benefits section is the one, they're the group that handles the claims. I do have frequent discussions with them because my veterans are very concerned about the processing of their claims for service connection. I understand that the regional office has added additional staff, and they're working to work down these backlogs as quickly as possible. I know that we've been slammed with a number of returning veterans. That's no excuse. We are trying to do our best to try to make sure we take care of our vets and the families who would be depending on these pensions if they're granted them.
Ken Lucas is commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Veteran Affairs.
Yes, it's ironic. Yesterday I met with some folks in the Louisville regional office. We were talking about we work with our state folks and them, and what they're developing what they call the fully developed claim. And one of the big delays in claims is if there's a missing piece of information out there, it stops the claim cold. And if a veteran has a medical history with a private practitioner and that practitioner doesn't get that information in, it goes on hold. But there is some light at the end of the tunnel. I know these folks in the regional office, they talked about situations where there was a widow that got DIC benefits and they worked – I mean, around the clock to get her money right away because it was desperately needed. And also in the case where a veteran is very, very ill or maybe does not have but months to live, and they get their claims and they rush them through so they can at least have some gratification before they meet their final resting place. And I think another very quick thing is the claims because of Agent Orange really caused a big backlog. And so I think they're doing a lot to work through that, and I know that the federal VA has putting a lot of extra people on there working overtime to get this done. So it is going to get better. It may still take some time.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your call. And that was Tom from Williamsburg. We invite you to get on the line at 800-621-8890. Send an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We encourage our listeners at any time to carry on the conversation. You can interact with yourselves by going to our Facebook page. And also you can send us a tweet at WEKUEST. We talked a bit about the Horses for Heroes program. Are there other Kentucky-specific services available for veterans that may not be available elsewhere?
Well, I would just say we actually offer a bridge program. That's we were talking earlier about my dissertation work.
At Eastern
Kentucky University. It's called the Veterans Bridge to College Success Program. And it's really designed, you know, a lot of these young men and women, they join the service. They probably sometimes make that mind up while they're early in their high school careers, and then they don't take their last couple of years maybe very seriously. So they – not that they're not smart or prepared, but they're rusty with their skills. And so what we try to do is help them come back. We put them in a transition program that helps them knock the rust off of their academic skills. And we do that in a cohorted process to actually help them make the transition. And actually what I found in the research was that we can make them as successful as their peers in terms of retention and success academically. One of the struggles, when we were talking about this earlier, the freshmen have a hard – the military veteran has a real hard time with that freshman in the classroom who comes up and says, you know, have you killed anybody? And they don't really want to answer that question. Or the student texting in class while they're trying to, you know, take notes and pay attention. And so there are some transition issues, and I think we are trying to address those here.
What about other effects on the campus community in general, having a large number of veterans on campus? Is it how is that a positive for the university?
Well, it's a positive because of the leadership that these young people have. They come to the classroom. They're inquisitive. They want to learn. They're very eager to learn. And so they bring those real world experiences, you know, about what it's like to be and live in a foreign country and be shot at and all those other type of things that these young men and women haven't experienced. So they really add a great flavor to the classroom. And they're very eager to be part of the campus community. One of the things I love about Eastern, I'm not from Kentucky, but one of the things I love about the history of Eastern is like during Vietnam, other schools, and I say other schools up the road or in out of state, had their armories burned or had major protests during the Vietnam era. We were naming streets and buildings after our veterans that served. So the proud heritage of service and in the Commonwealth, and particularly at Eastern Kentucky University, is great. And so, you know, I'm just very proud to be part of an institution that wants to put veterans first and up front. And we've been recognized nationally as a best for vet college by the Military Times. Two out of the last 3 years, we were the number one best for vet college in the country, number two once. And so that's a pretty good track record. And it's about that effort of trying to go the extra measure and really deliver services that help those young men and women make that transition out of the service and into school.
You know, one of the things I noticed when I was a member of Congress, mm-hmm. because part of my district went over into Eastern Kentucky, you know, there is just a stronger sense of patriotism in the eastern side of this state. I can't explain why. It just is. And that goes all across the eastern part of the state of Kentucky, and certainly here at Eastern Kentucky University is a benefactor of that.
Mm-hmm. Ken Lucas, as a former representative to the U.S. Congress, we had you on the program a few weeks ago talking about the government shutdown. Have there been any lasting results or lasting effects on veteran services caused by the government shutdown of, what was it, 15 days? Or?
Not really. I think had it gone on for an extended period of time, but certainly at the state level there was no shutdown. And I don't think there was much of a shutdown. I think some people were furloughed at the level, but I don't think those were the people that were paying claims. They were people in other departments. But I don't think there was any major effect on the veterans.
At the hospital, all the staff that work with patients are considered essential. And the VA budget cycle is a little different than the rest of the some of the other federal agencies. So we were not affected in terms of staff being there to care for our patients. There were some admin staff, I think, who did not do patient care who were furloughed, but they're back at work now. The main concern we had was for our veterans whose anxiety was very great about their checks and their benefits, and we reassured them that they would continue to be paid and that we would also serve their medical needs.
Where does services for veterans stand within the federal budget in terms of all of the conversations going on? Were veteran services hit by the sequester, for instance, or are veteran services in dispute or in question in proposed budgets that are coming up?
Commissioner Lucas may have a better answer, but I, best of my knowledge, sir, I don't believe that the veterans are impacted by the sequester.
No, and on top of that, this present administration increased the budget for veterans and their services. Increased it, it was increased. So I think that's the veterans certainly didn't suffer. In fact, they're doing better under this administration.
You know, and the post 9/11 GI Bill really returned us to the era where a student could really afford to go to college. That had over the generations of, you know, time from the time it was incepted kind of been worn down. And the passage of that has allowed many, many more to go and actually pursue that
and education. A generous benefit, I might add, relatively speaking.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they have now the ability to sustain themselves in terms of not only get their college paid for, but have enough money to survive and provide for their families while they're working on that education. And that's kind of important to making that transition to the next level.
What else is needed for veterans in the Commonwealth of Kentucky? Additional funding, additional services?
Well, I would say one of the things that we're working on is, and I was talking to the doctor earlier, is about retention of students. You know, many of them are coming to school, but they're still not passing at the number of credit hours that we want them to do. So we're going to look at trying to beef up our advising, academic advising, and trying to help keep them in school, because if they don't pass at the right rate, they'll run out of benefits before they run out of requirements to graduate. And so those are one of the things that we're looking at a little closer.
We have a story from the Associated Press that I was handed earlier this morning. The Kentucky National Guard, the Kentucky Department of Veteran Affairs, and the University of Louisville have launched an outpatient program as a way to mitigate the backlog of cases awaiting action by the Federal Veterans Affairs Administration. The goal of the program, officials say, is to move veterans more quickly into treatment after they are either referred to seek out help on their own for problems such as depression or post-traumatic stress disorder. The Kentucky National Guard received an $80,000 grant from the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs to create that program. Ken Luke is nodding. You're
yes,
familiar with it.
I'm chairman of that group that granted that award. And this is a temporary stopgap situation because there were so many veterans who were there was such a backlog that they weren't able to be seen. So in a cooperative effort with the University of Louisville, and of course there's a huge concentration of veterans in the greater Louisville area, that's the reason, and they were anxious to do that. So for the next several months, we're going to see folks who are in need of some counseling that can't get served at the hospital because of the big load.
Gentlemen, we are out of time. It's been an interesting conversation. We thank our listeners for participating in the show. With us today have been Ken Lucas, Commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Veteran Affairs, Brett Morris, Interim Director of the EKU, Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, and Kevin Pernicano, Chief Mental Health Services at the VA Medical Center in Lexington. Thanks, gentlemen, for being with us. We encourage you to join us next week for Eastern Standard, a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Our associate producers are Andrew Moorhead and Richard Turner. Our technical director is Jonice Franklin. We remind you the show is available online, will be available online later today, and it is repeated on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. We're interested in hearing from you at any time. Please stay in touch. For WEKU and Eastern Standard, I'm John Hingsbergen.